on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
I've always really seen technology as something that can boost the performance of a lawyer and improve the way that legal practice is handled. So from the beginnings of my work in legal innovation, one of the things that excited me was the potential for technology to really disrupt the way that we practice law and provide legal services to clients. I really think law plus technology is a good way of looking at it, because the coinciding of those two things is becoming more and more present and more real. And certainly for me, I see that as a positive thing, because it's modernizing the law in a very beneficial way.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast. This is the first episode of the third season, and for this, we'll be discussing how to fall in love with the problem and not with the solution, discussing the importance of digging into a problem with Nikki Shaver. Now, Nikki is the CEO of the Legal Tech Hub, and over the past 20 years, she has practiced law at large law firms and media companies across the world, led knowledge and innovation teams, and advised legal tech companies and corporate legal on legal tech procurement. Nikki, we just mentioned it already, but we are super excited to have you on the show. So thank you so much for kicking off the third season with us.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, before we actually get into the topic that I just mentioned, falling in love with the problem rather with the solution, there's some background to this episode, and that is the paper by Thibault Schreppel, which basically is about the topic of shifting from the law and technology approach to the law plus technology approach. What we're basically trying to answer in this kind of series of episodes that we have for the first quarter of 2023 is whether a new era has arisen. And we're very curious, obviously, to hear from you what you think about that. So maybe starting with that and then moving to the topic of finding problems, well, what is your vision on this, you could say, transformation? And do you see this transformation in practice as well?
For me, I must say that law plus technology is a nice way of looking at it or saying it. I've always really seen technology as something that can boost the performance of a lawyer and improve the way that legal practice is handled. So from the beginnings of my work in legal innovation, one of the things that excited me was the potential for technology to really disrupt the way that we practice law and provide legal services to clients, especially because, as is well known, law, compared to many industries, has been behind in really adopting technology as a solution, which means that there is an incredibly rich field ahead of us. And I think that even though there has been quite a lot of work over the last, say, 5 to 7 years, which is when I would say this has really been an industry or become an industry of its own, I think there is still a lot to be done. And I find that tremendously exciting. So I certainly look at technology as a solution, especially as technology advances. I really think law plus technology is a good way of looking at it, because the coinciding of those two things is becoming more and more present and more real. And certainly for me, I see that as a positive thing, because it's modernizing the law in a very beneficial way. Another element around the power of technology to enable legal practice, I think, is one that is exciting potentially to lawyers, which is things are possible now in legal practice that were not possible before. So it's changing the practice of law, not just in the way that law is undertaken or the way that legal services are delivered or minimizing risk, for example, but the ability for technology to process data means that all of a sudden lawyers are able to access patterns and trends in data around the law that simply were not possible before. Looking at, say, a list of your last 5, 10, 20 cases of a similar nature. It used to be something that one had to do fairly manually, fairly arduously. Perhaps legal practices would keep summaries of those cases, and these would be accessed for this purpose. Perhaps you'd even have summary tables that were quite helpful. Now you have tools that are able to digest that data, years and years of that data, not just from your firm, but combining that data from your firm with data from other firms in the market generally, put it together into something that allow lawyers to very quickly at a glance see, is this trend changing? What is the trend? What is the market position for a particular clause in a contract or for a particular position in a negotiation? That actually empowers lawyers in a way that physically was not possible before. So from my perspective, I wanted to add that because I think this is something that technology does that is not often discussed. It's not just about process. It's also about fundamentally providing better tools to lawyers to help them do the law differently.
What does that actually mean for legal professionals? I mean, the fact that this can happen, what does it mean for professionals just on a daily basis or in general for the legal profession as a whole?
It means that legal professionals can be better lawyers. They can be better lawyers. They can give better advice that is more up to date. They can see at a glance when something changes very quickly, so they can get a jump and inform their clients. They can use data to predict when something is likely to happen, which means that they're able to likely inform clients or advise clients that perhaps the market is about to change or something may be impending that they should prepare for. It gives them actionable information that they are able to use in order to practice law and become much more strategic partners for their clients. So from my perspective, that is a fundamental change in what lawyers are able to do. It empowers them.
Yeah, because you hear a lot of discussion about, you know, lawyers being replaced, or in this case, it's lawyers being empowered. So I was curious. I was like, what does this mean in practice?
Right. For legal innovators, I think this is a really key thing, right? You can talk about technology in a way that scares people, or you can talk about technology in a way that excites people. And I think the fact that it has the potential to empower people. When I worked in a law firm, one of the things that I would talk about, because we all talk about the billable hour and the difficulty with discussing efficiency and automation in circumstances where the billable hour is still king. You know, do you want things to be efficient if it minimizes the hours that you're able to bill? Well, turn that on its head. What if you were able to reduce the non-billable time in a law firm and able to ensure that your lawyers, where they're spending time, are actually spending time on billable tasks? Basically, it enables you to make more money. So I think turning the argument around and really highlighting the positive things that technology can do in a way that is meaningful to the lawyers themselves is the way that we actually drive change and drive transformation in the industry.
Now, moving back to something you said earlier, you mentioned that you believe that there is still a lot of opportunity for technology to improve the legal landscape. That is assuming that there are some problems in the legal landscape. I'm assuming at least that there are some problems that potentially have already been solved or are being solved, and some problems that will still have to be solved. Kind of moving to the topic of identifying a problem, which I would like to talk about in more depth. First of all, what are some of the problems that we have been facing, and what are some of the problems that you believe we are still facing and that technology might offer a solution to in the future?
Sure. I mean, this is a very broad question. There will always be problems. And when we talk about problems, I think that infers that things are not being done correctly. And that's not really what we mean. What we mean is there are pain points. There are areas where lawyers are spending time that are onerous and manual when things could be done rapidly and efficiently and automatically. So when I'm talking about problems that have been solved, really looking at things like e-discovery and due diligence, where once upon a time you had lawyers, you know, stuck in a room with boxes and boxes and boxes of hard copy documents, going through them manually, highlighting things, making notes with a pen on paper, creating a record, creating a report, using post-it notes. And now they do all of this automatically through the help of a computer, through the help of data analytics to highlight the most likely relevant documents, for example, or the red flags for a due diligence, and then automatically creating a report as you review these documents. So, you know, it's really looking at things where there has been a pain point, which I identify as something that if you were a lawyer, you think, why am I spending my time doing this? I was a litigator. I worked in law firms until midnight or 3 a.m. doing things like literally hand stamping page numbers on a legal brief and then photocopying legal briefs hard copy to create multiple copies so that the judge would have one, the other side would have one, our barrister would have one. That is after spending many, many years becoming an educated lawyer. That wasn't using my brain. It makes no sense. That's a pain point. There will continue to be pain points moving forwards, and that's partly because the law is always evolving, you know. So there will always be new problems because law is evolving, and with it, new pain points will come up. What one wants to do is to uncover those pain points for lawyers as and when they come up, and identify opportunities for automation or otherwise injecting technology in a way that allows for a solution to create a bridge to a better way of doing things or a higher quality output.
And linking to that, in some of your work, you mentioned that on the one hand, you have the problem or the pain point, and then you have the solutions that are being offered. But oftentimes people tend to delve into the solution, deeper into the solution, before they actually properly understand the problem. So could you elaborate a little bit more on that? Like, what is the issue there?
Yeah, I think really what I'm talking about is an approach that comes from service design, product design originally, which is this notion of falling in love with a problem. Often in law firms, even when we have teams of people whose job it is to solve problems, we go about it the wrong way. And that happens for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is a pet peeve of mine, which is there is still a tendency in law firms to hire lawyers or former lawyers for every single role. And so if you hire only former lawyers who have no other experience to do things like knowledge management or innovation, what you're getting is the exact same type of personality and skill set on your change team that you have in the population that you widely discuss as being resistant to change. And that makes no sense unless you are skilling up the people you're hiring to be change agents, change advocates, be able to push change forward with actual methodologies. So I think that's one reason it happens. And the reason hiring lawyers leads to this kind of thing is because all of us innately as human beings, but especially lawyer personalities, have a tendency to leap to a solution. And that's because it's kind of their job. A client calls and says, here's my problem. And what the lawyer wants to do right away is determine a solution to that problem, because that is, to them, meeting clients' expectations. The problem is, even in legal practice, but also in legal innovation and problem solving that might involve process improvement, technology implementation, you cannot know that you are solving the problem correctly unless you understand what that problem is and if you are solving the right problem for the right people and the right needs. So it's almost bringing a rigorous scientific approach to identifying problems and then spending enough time to really understand what is the problem. And so a famous adage, of course, is you don't need, when someone comes to you and says, I need to buy a drill, I need a drill. Really, they don't need a drill. That's not their core need, right? That's not their problem. The problem isn't, I don't have a drill in my tool set. The problem is, I need a hole in the wall. And a drill will get me the hole in the wall. But actually taking it back even further, What do they need a hole in the wall for? To hang a picture, or to put a hook in the wall. And depending on what you're looking to actually do, the size of the hole will be different and the drill will look different. And maybe it's not a drill at all. So if unless you understand what the actual need is, you may go out and solve the wrong problem. And that's a real danger. And I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen numerous times in law firms where people hear from a lawyer that they have a particular problem. They run off, they build a solution without involving the lawyer whatsoever in the development of that solution or the choice of technology, if technology is in fact part of the solution. And then they present it only to find this does not address the core problem at all because the core problem was not understood in the beginning.
That's interesting. And so does that mean that finding the or understanding the problem is essentially asking the right questions?
Yes. Or is it asking pausing to ask questions to begin with. So I think a couple of things. One is you need to uncover problems or pain points or issues if you want to undertake a process of change and transformation. So having in place systems and strategies that allow you to understand what the pain points are that are coming up in practice. That's number one. And there are ways to do that. There are surveys, listening programs where you actually go out and speak to people to understand within a particular practice what are the specific pain points. Speaking to clients to understand from their perspective what are their pain points with the way that the law firm is handling their matters. That's number one. Number two, once the pain points or the problems have been raised or someone has come to you with a problem, is instead of making an assumption about a solution, making an assumption, for example, that this could be solved simply by going out and buying a shiny new piece of technology, is instead to pause. And if you are leading innovation, it's very important to teach your whole team to do this, to pause, to spend time to go back to that person. Ideally, you have someone on your team who actually comes from a service design or product management background, who is trained in the art of asking open-ended questions around the problem and understand deeply, why is this a problem? What is it that this person is trying to achieve? How has this come up? Why are existing solutions not working for this person? When do they experience this problem? Is it a problem just for them, or is it a problem for other people on their team as well? And there are all kinds of methodologies you can use in order to really do that work. One of them is the five whys, which I've written about before, which is asking why five times within the conversation. It sounds so simple. It's weird, though, because
it actually works, isn't it?
It works. They don't like to do it because it keeps you in the problem. And everyone assumes that the person you're speaking to who has the problem just wants it solved like that quickly and doesn't want to speak about it. But you need to understand deeply what it is. So asking why numerous times, really asking around the problem, can get you to that place where you've mapped out the problem. And then there's work to be done in actually writing it down, mapping it out, going back to the person, making sure you've got it right, again, before you start looking at solutions.
There's actually something that I'm extremely passionate about, because legal design is something I adore completely. And now that you were just mentioning about the five whys and how lawyers think about a problem and then their tendency to jump into a solution because they've been trained to, you're definitely familiar with the five steps of the design thinking methodology. I'm very interested. I want to know what you think about the concept of iteration for lawyers. Let me give you an example. I really want to know more from your direct working experience, please. So let's say as a junior lawyer, I'm working on a draft and I'm doing my very best to provide a good piece of work, but I'm definitely aware that if I follow the design thinking methodology, that's just iteration one. Or maybe just a prototype. But my manager or my senior, let's say my senior lawyer, he pretends the perfect version immediately. So, you know, there's kind of a clash here. I want to ask you, Can you see in your experience a progressive shift into the iterative mentality of doing law apart from technology itself, or you think we're still far behind? What's your vision?
It's a really good question. As with so many things that we have been gradually employing on the legal innovation side, including things like the agile process, ways of working, but also, yes, design thinking. Design thinking with its five steps can be stultifying in some ways if you're trying to institute it in that linear fashion every time you're looking at a problem or a piece of work. Instead, what I suggest is educating, again, your lawyers, your legal innovation team on the principles of design thinking and service design more broadly, to get people to think about what it means to iteratively solve a problem. And so I don't think, for example, that in the context of legal work, what it means is that you would say, is a memo the right solution right now, or might it be an app, right? It's not that sort of brainstorming, because when it comes to legal work, that's a very quick way to get your seniors pretty annoyed with you. And unless you work in a pretty open environment and the billable hour isn't much of a thing, you might get yourself into trouble. I think what is really important to take away is it is not as important as lawyers think to provide a perfect response the first time. It is more important to make sure that what you are producing is something that you work collaboratively with your client or the person at the heart of the problem on, so that the solution genuinely meets their needs. So understanding, client, I have this executive summary. Is this sufficient for you, or do you want the longer 20-page memo that I'm about to spend $15,000 of your money developing and writing and polishing and rewriting and re-editing? That kind of iteration in the way that we undertake legal work, I think, is really valuable to bring from the service design perspective. And certainly when it comes to legal innovation work, it's something I think we should always do. So we would use, in my team, we would use brainstorming, for example, as part of our meetings fairly frequently. I've used it at Legal Tech Hub as well. So when we have a problem that we need to solve, we will actually use some of these design thinking practices in our work to develop a number of different ways we could approach solving the problem, knowing that a collaborative approach always, always leads to a better solution. It's proven to do so.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting that I've only had very little experience in legal practice from a law firm perspective, at least. But I think there's still a lot of pressure to, especially as a junior, to present your achievements, to achieve and to present what you achieve. So I think that there it also becomes difficult with this mentality that exists within, well, maybe not all law firms, but especially, within bigger teams, that this iterative approach and taking the time to truly understand what is necessary before you actually undertake action, it's a difficult shift to make. At least that's my initial thought.
It's hugely difficult. And I mean, you're absolutely right. I've been in a situation before, for example, when a client has come to a partner that I was working with to say, we want to work with you and your innovation team on collaborating in some way. Can you provide us with some ideas? And so the partner came to me. I wasn't given direct access to the client in this case, which is one of the fundamental problems of law firms at the moment, is that partners guard these relationships so carefully when actually they might benefit enormously from giving access to other kinds of professionals at the firm. And I said, it's very difficult to provide ideas for collaborating on a solution for the client to improve the way they work unless we understand what their problems are. So why don't we suggest having a workshop with them where we help them to identify the problems that they have and suggest then some ideas on ways we could work with them to improve things. And the partner said no, because he thought that it would be showcasing weakness to go back and say, effectively, we don't know what your problems are. It was better in his mind to assume and suggest some things in a vacuum. And I cannot imagine if I had some way of contacting that client later and said, would this have been helpful? I cannot imagine that client, who after all is just a person, right? They are in fact people.
Yeah, seeking advice also.
Right, that they have
either way, yeah,
valued a workshop to really help them, genuinely help them. So you're right, absolutely. It's a huge problem. And it's something that we need to just pick away at, I think, gradually over time.
Yeah. Very difficult, but nonetheless important. And also, maybe moving from like the, you know, identifying a problem towards actually framing a problem and acting upon that problem. You just, in the example you gave, you mentioned this process already. What does it take to move from, okay, we have a problem, we understand what the problem is, to properly framing the problem so we can work with it and then actually act upon such a problem? I mean, the acting upon may already lead more towards the solution part. I'm not completely sure, but I'll leave it to you. I'm just curious to know, how do you move from phase A to phase B and C?
So once you have the information that you need about the problem, what it is, who is experiencing it, what their needs are in relation to that problem, because you may have a problem, for example, that affects both associates and partners, or perhaps some paralegals as well. And the needs of those three user groups may be different in relation to the problem, which lends complexity to the problem. Once you understand all of those components of the problem, you frame the problem by developing a set of requirements. What is it that we need to solve for? And what does that look like? And getting that in writing, so actually developing a set of requirements for the solution. It must do this for this person. It must do this. It must do this. Developing those requirements is your final step of problem definition, but also your first step of moving towards a solution. You refine your requirements, and then you prioritize those. What are the most important things on that list? You can use a scale of 1 to 10, for example. It gives you a nice little equation when you start looking at solutions to have those with priority weightings attached. You may decide that the problem is too complex if you're going to address all aspects of the problem right away for everybody. And you may decide that your priority is to solve it for one type of user group initially, and that will reduce your list of requirements and help you mm-hmm. refine and develop a solution that addresses first the first part of the problem, but then allows you to build. So that's the next step of where you go. And just a baby plug here for Legal Tech Hub, I will say, because this is something that we feel very deeply about and a problem that I have engaged with for many years, Legal Tech Hub Premium, which is launching actually this month, is a subscription site built around our directory that will have tools that support innovation teams in exactly this, building requirements, providing basic sets of requirements that people can use and then tweak as they refine their problem and move towards looking at solutions. Because it's a difficult thing to do, especially if you're doing it for the first time in relation to a particular problem. But once you have a set of requirements, it's much easier to tweak those. So that's the next step. And then from there, of course, you move towards looking at solutions. And I don't mean just technology solutions. I mean, looking at, does this require technology? Is there a process we must first refine, improve, remove the inefficiencies from? Is the problem partly to do with the types of people who are doing this work, or are there too many people involved in this process? So that's when you move on to that. And I'm very happy to talk more about that as well. But I'm cognizant of the fact that we're not talking about solutions. We're talking about problems. So I will follow my own advice and come back to you all around the problem.
No worries at all. Honestly, it's extremely interesting. So for us, every bit that you tell is just more food for thought. So don't feel restricted in what you want to say. I am curious though, also, I think you also before you said in the example that you gave prior to this topic that we were talking about, it would be very useful when you're talking about or understanding problems to also include other members of the team, not just in your case, it was the example of the partner and you didn't want to give access to any of the contacts or information. And you said, you know, it would be more useful perhaps if they had access to other members with other insights, probably. So in this problem identification, framing, and acting up on process, which people should be involved? Is there like a set of people that should be involved, in your opinion, or how should a team, or of whom should the team consist in order to really thrive in understanding what a problem is and finding a solution?
Really good question. I mean, it does depend to some extent on the problem, right? And okay. From the user perspective, what you want to do is have the people in the room who experience the problem. And so that may be various members of a practice group, or at least representatives of all of the different types or personas of people who experience the problem. On the innovation team side, which I think is more what you're talking about. An innovation team these days is a multidisciplinary team of professionals who have different backgrounds. I should say a good innovation team these days.
Okay.
The reason for that is that there are different skills and strengths that need to be brought to this kind of work. So in the room for a problem identification exercise, you will want someone who effectively comes from a service design or product management background and really deeply understands how to ask questions, open-ended questions, and get to the root cause of a problem. If you don't have someone like that on your team, educating people on your team in the art of design thinking or service design is another way to go. IDEO offers a number of courses that are useful. There are all kinds of books that you can read. It's not ideal. It's better to have a team where you actually have someone on the team with that sort of background. And then usually you would have, you know, someone with credibility on the team. So someone who has built trust and a relationship with the lawyers in the room. That might be a knowledge management lawyer, for example, who supports the team and has the subject matter expertise. So having that subject matter, depending on the problem, but often having someone with subject matter expertise who also understands the innovation side can be very useful, almost to act as a translator between the two when necessary. Also someone potentially who has some authority within the firm, someone who understands and when I say authority, that doesn't mean they have to be, you know, at C level. It means, again, they need to be someone where the partner feels like, okay, I'm dealing with someone that I can speak to who I understand would be the authority to solve this problem for me. And within that group of professionals, ideally, you would also have understanding amongst you of what existing processes and technologies and people there are within the firm to come to bear on a problem like this. But really, I mean, you can keep it small for if the exercise is just problem definition, having subject matter expertise combined with that kind of service design approach of open-ended questions, listening, and perhaps someone to take notes to build up requirements, that will get you there.
Thank you so much for all of these insights. And I wish we would have had time to actually give you the opportunity to talk a little bit more about the finding solutions side, but it's all fine. We have like a little tradition we want to introduce in this season, and that is to ask our guest to think of a question for the guests of the next episode. So I will give you some background on what the next episode will be. The next episode will be about the question, what legal innovation actually means, and then specifically understanding change in the legal sector between transformation and disruption.
Yes. So let me think. That puts me on the spot a little bit.
I'm sorry. should have warned you from the start.
I think it would be interesting to ask the next guest, and I'm not sure who it is. I think it would be very interesting to ask this person how legal innovation differs between law firm environments and corporate legal environments, and whether they are seeing, I don't know if they are in a position to do so, but whether they are seeing greater traction within law firms or corporate legal, and what the rise of legal operations, the impact of the rise of legal operations on innovation for corporate legal departments. So that's kind of two questions, really. The impact of legal operations on innovation in corporate legal departments, and the difference between corporate legal and law firms around legal innovation.
Okay, that's definitely an interesting question. Just wanted to ask you how people can reach out to you, or how they can find more information about the Legal Tech Hub, and also the platform that you just mentioned that you'll be launching soon.
Absolutely. So Legal Tech Hub is just www.legaltechnologyhub.com. It is a comprehensive directory of global legal technology solutions that we are building and evolving all the time. And on that platform from January 17th onwards, you will be able to see a sneak peek of a lot of our content and subscribe to our premium platform, which will have all kinds of practical guidance around legal technology for lawyers, legal technology procurement tools for legal innovation teams, know-how and practical guidance such as technology stacks for different practice areas and different companies or organizations. So a whole lot of really valuable, high-quality content driven by experts in the industry. And if you want to reach out to me personally, feel free to find me on LinkedIn. It's Nicola Shaver, or my email is nikki@legaltechnologyhub.com. But thank you both so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed our discussion. It's been really such a pleasure and a delight. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review, as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast.